O King, O Hero, you were a very grateful husband and the most sincere friends of all of us. How shall we exist without you? O Hero, wherever you are going, please direct us there so that we may follow in your footsteps and engage again in your service. Let us go along with you. Please repeat, O King,
O King,
O Hero,
O Hero,
you are a very grateful husband. And the most sincere friend of all of us. How shall we exist without you? O Hero, wherever you are going, please direct us there so that we may follow in your footsteps and engage again in your service. Let us go along with you. Who is saying that to? Wife of Sujata. Brahma Kshupi Uvacha. O King, O Hero, you are a very great husband, or you are a very grateful husband, and the most sincere friend of all of us. How shall we exist without you? O Hero, wherever you are going, please direct us there, so that we may follow in your footsteps and engage again in your service. Let us go along with you. Is it Hiranyaksha's wife, son? I'll just briefly read it through you. Yeah. This is after Hiranyaksha's death, Hiranyakashipu is there. Dying with the husband who was their life. When Pandu Maharaj, the father of the Pandavas, died, his two wives, namely the mother of Yudhishthir, Bhima and Arjuna, and the mother of Nakula and Shakyamuni, were both ready to die in the fire with their husband. Later, after a compromise was arranged, Kunti stayed alive to care for the little children, and the other wife, Madri, was allowed to die with her husband. This system of Shahumaran continued in India even until the time of British rule, but later it was discouraged, since the attitude of wives gradually changed with the advancement of Kali Yuga. Thus, the system of Shahumaran was practically been abolished. Nevertheless, within the past 50 years, I have seen the wife of a medical practitioner voluntarily accept death immediately when her husband died. Both the husband and wife were taken in procession in the mourning cart. Such intense love of a chaste wife for her husband is a special case. So in the Vedic time, it was the custom that when the husband died, then the wife would voluntarily enter into the funeral pyre of the husband and thus give up her body which is known as Sahomaran. Saho means along with, and Maran means death, which means the dying along with the husband. And also it is called Shoti. Shoti means a very chaste wife. And when the wife is very chaste, then she feels a very intense pain due to the separation from her husband. And that's why she feels that it is useless or it is meaningless to be alive anymore. Usually, we notice in our own experience that when we are very attached to something, when we love something very much, then our whole existence actually depends on that object of love. And if that object of love is not there, then one feels, then what is the use of being alive now? So a wife was mainly, the wife's life was solely attached to the life of the husband. She, as a matter of fact, a woman's life is centered around her husband. In the Vedas it is said that a woman is actually her husband's property. But she is brought up by her father as if it is deposited to him. Like, it is the husband's property, but the father and mother of the girl is bringing her up as if they are taking care of somebody's property, and at a due age she is offered back to her husband. And then also after the husband dies, then she used to feel that now what's the use of my being alive? Let me just give up my body. Let me also go along with my husband. And this was possible because the Vedic culture was not a material culture. It was not based on the body. The Vedic culture was a spiritual culture. And everybody had the understanding that the life doesn't end at the time of death. Giving up the body is not the end of life. Instead, the life continues even after death. And it is the spirit that is our actual identity. So, when the husband died, then the wife would follow him, or also die along with the husband by entering into the fire and continue with the husband in the next life. The spirit, wherever the spirit soul of the husband would go, the wife's spirit also would follow him. And this way they would carry on further and further, because there is another consideration also, that is the wife's advancement depends on the husband. Like in the Vedic time, following the Vedic rituals, one used to make progress. Actually, the process of making advancement is by gradually progressing in the spiritual path. And before this Sankirtan movement, before this Hare Krishna Mahamantra was given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the process of making spiritual progress was quite difficult. By following the Vedic ritual, to make the progress was very difficult actually. Like, one had to perfectly perform varnashram dharma, one had to be a perfect brahmachari, Then after grihastha life he had to be a vanaprasthi and then a sannyasi. So that was actually a very difficult process. And for a woman it was not possible. It was not possible for a woman to follow this Vedic ritual, Vedic rules and regulations and make spiritual progress. So that's why at that time the process was that a woman used to just follow the husband, and if the husband was at making advancement spiritually, then the wife also used to get the benefit. And that way they used to derive the benefit just by following the husband. Like, to give an example, we can cite a simple example, like the man goes out and makes a lot of money, and the woman, just being married to that man, she enjoys the wealth, right? I mean, she doesn't have to go out and make the money herself. The man goes out and makes the money, he makes $1,000,000, and the woman, just being married to him and being faithful to him, she also reaps the benefit. The same way, when one makes spiritual advancement, the woman, the wife, is to automatically derive the benefit. And also, I mean, since it was a spiritual benefit, it used to continue with the spirit. So it did not end with the death. So they used to continue. The woman, the wife, used to follow the husband and thus used to get the benefit even in the spiritual platform. And so that's why it was the understanding that the man should be very pious, man should be very virtuous, and a woman should be very faithful to her husband, and that way both of them will make advancement. But of course in the age of Kali, the men have become very impious and the women have become unfaithful. So that's why there is so much chaos in this age. But in the before Kali Yuga, the social system was very very strict, very pure. And because of that purity, everyone was making advancement towards spiritual direction. And as we are discussing here, the shati or shahumaram, the woman after the man's death would think, there was the use of my being alive now. The object of my love, the object of my respect is now have left me, now has left me, so what's the point in continuing in this body? I would rather give up this body and go along with my husband. But when the British went to India, they stopped that system. Because this way you can see that how the Vedic culture was being destroyed by the Western culture. The East, especially India, was the center of the Vedic culture. And that Vedic culture was destroyed. The destruction began from the Muslims who went from Persia and Turkey and Afghanistan. And then came the British. And they plundered all over the entire India, and they destroyed the Vedic culture, and they tried to establish their so-called civilization. And what is their civilization? Their civilization is that the women should become unchaste, the man should become impious, irreligious, and do all kinds of sinful activities like eat meat, take intoxication, have illicit sex, and gamble. And it was started very expertly by the British. They set up their colonies all over the world practically, and they destroyed all the spiritual culture, especially in India. And they stopped this Shruti Pratha because they could not understand that how a woman can be in such intense love with her husband. How the wife can be so faithful to her husband. That shows that in their society, the women were unchaste. In their society, the women were not faithful to their husband. The women were not so intensely in love with their husband. So they could not understand that why a woman should follow the husband in her death, in the funeral pyre. So they stopped it. There are many other rituals which was very, very divine and very pure. They stopped because they thought that it was barbaric. It reminds me of one incident that during the British time in India, one woman was going to enter into the funeral pyre after her husband's death in Shahu Moron. And so those days, whenever the British would hear that some woman was entering into the fire like that, then they would go and stop the thing, would not allow the woman to die like that. So, of course, in this respect, another side also we have to consider that sometimes this process, this system was imposed forcibly. Like sometimes, this Sahomaran Pratha, the system of dying with the husband was not compulsory, it was voluntary. A woman could decide whether she would enter into the fire or not. I mean, the wife, used to voluntarily enter into the fire. But at certain time in India, it became a forced. Sometimes the woman would be tied by the hands and feet and thrown into the fire. So that was another aspect of Kali Yuga. Like in India, some people did not have the right understanding and they just follow the ritual. They were fanatics. And that is what happens due to fanaticism. That the fanatical people, they do not have the philosophical understanding or spiritual understanding. They simply follow the external ritual. And this was happening, like forcibly the women were put into the fire when she was not willing. And anyway, the Vedic culture was decaying in India, was being destroyed in India at that time. Many Indians also became very demonic. It has been said that the Brahmins actually destroyed the Vedic culture. And in the scriptures it has been said that in the Kali Yuga, the demons will be born in the Brahmin family. So in obviously, the demons were being born in Brahmin families in India and they destroyed the Vedic culture that way. So, but there is another side, how the British destroyed it too. And so one example that I was citing, that the woman was about to enter into the fire and the British came. They were the rulers of India at that time. So they came, tried to stop. Then the woman told the British magistrate that, "Why are you stopping me?" Then they tried to make her understand that, "No, you shouldn't do that." But she said, "No, I mean, my life does not have any meaning anymore." And so she said that, "I'm without my husband, I do not want to live, because the separation from him is so painful that the fire will be soothing to me." That is, the the way her heart was burning due to the separation from her husband, that fire is 1,000 times more painful than this fire. And they couldn't understand, the British couldn't understand what she was talking about. She said, this fire will soothe me, like the way you extinguish fire with water, the same way this fire will extinguish the fire that is burning my heart due to the separation. And then just to prove herself, she put her hand in the fire, and her hand was burned, but she did not display any pain, display the feeling of any pain. That showed that this fire, her heart was burning so intensely that this fire was not at all painful to her. And so then the British had to allow her. So actual thing was that out of love for the husband, the woman, the wife, used to follow him even after his death. And the spirit used to follow. Like, it is not that after death the husband's spirit soul went in one direction and the wife's spirit soul went to another direction. Since they were very intensely in love, they used to go along, they used to go together. Actually, love is the criterion that bring us together, that bind us together. Hatred take us away from each other. So, in that those days in the Vedic society, the man and woman were, the husband and wife were in such deep love for each other that they used to continue even life after death. I remember reading in some parts of the Bible that were saying that when a man and women are in great love, when a husband and wife are very much in love, then after death they become one, and that body is the body of an angel. Did you ever read that the angel is the perfect husband and wife combined together? They become angels. Like, angel is not just a man or a woman, it's just a complete man and woman together. But of course, it is in the mundane platform. In the material platform, these things are applicable, that husband and wife should be very intensely in love with each other. Although it is spiritual to the extent that it is dharma, it is religiosity, it is acting according to Krishna's instruction, dharmam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. Religion actually is the instructions of the law. And so they were following this religion, acting according to the instructions of the Lord, and which says that one man, husband and wife, should be very faithful to each other and loving and so on and so forth. But still it is on the mundane platform. It is in the material platform. But in the absolute platform, that, you know, we have to just love Krishna and that's it. In the mundane platform, the instruction is the wife should be very faithful to the husband. But in the absolute platform, in the highest platform of spiritual, highest platform of Krishna consciousness, what we learn? That if for the sake of Krishna, a woman has to give up her husband, that's good. That is the perfection of life. So we must understand that these are not the ultimate consideration. The ultimate consideration is Krishna, not the husband and wife, because that is based on the physical platform. But we have to transcend the physical platform and come to the spiritual platform. And the spirit is in love with Krishna and no one else. the spirit is in love with Krishna and the one, those who are connected to Krishna, related to Krishna. So when we come to the spiritual platform, then all this bodily consideration, actually the relationship between a husband and wife is just a bodily relationship. The spirit doesn't have the husband and wife as well. The spirit is neither a male nor a female. Or not male or female, not a man or a woman. Right? The spirit also has the male and female configuration. And the spirit has only one husband, the only one Lord. Who is that? Krishna. So that is our only husband. So we should become attached to Krishna this way. That wherever Krishna goes, we go with him. If we are separated from Krishna, then we should feel that now was the use of my being alive. Let me die. That should be our mood. Only Krishna as our Lord and Master, and we do not know anyone but Krishna. That's why in Shikshashtakam, in the last prayer, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, the Ashlishoba Padaratam Pinashtumam Adarshanam Marmahatam Karotuba Jatha Tathava Bidhadhatu Lampate Mat Pranonathastu Shaeva Napa. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the mood of Srimati Radharani, is telling, as the eternal lover of Krishna, telling that Ashlishoba Padadatam, I am your humble servant, I am your maid servant. Pinashtumam Adarshanan Marmahatam Parutu. You embrace me in great love, or you hurt me by not giving your darshan, not being visible to me. You are the supreme independent personality, Lampato. You are completely independent. You can do whatever you want to do. But mat pranonathastu shayeva napara. But you are my you are the Lord and Master of my heart and soul, Pranana. And I do not know anyone but you. So that should be our mood in the ultimate configuration. That Krishna is our only Lord and Master, Krishna is our only shelter, and our existence is simply dependent on Krishna. If we are with Krishna, then we are happy, then we are joyful. If we are without Krishna, then we are miserable. And we are so miserable that we should feel that now what's the use of my being alive? And our heart should burn the way the satis, the chaste wife's heart used to burn due to the separation of their husband. Hare Krishna. Is there any question? Comment?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that is that is because, you see, his life is so useless that he better die. That reminds, it's like to give an, to clarify this, that one, a saintly person, a great personality, gave four benedictions to four different kinds of people. To a prince, he gave the benediction that he should better not die. Right. To a brahmachari, the instruction was he better dies immediately. To a butcher, that he should neither live nor die. And to a devotee,
If he dies or if he is alive, is the same. Now he told the prince that he should die immediately, and he should not die because he is enjoying so much that when he dies, he has to pay for all the sins that he is committing now. So he has to suffer. So he better doesn't die. Let him enjoy forever. Because when he dies, then his enjoyment will be over and he has to suffer very much. Right? A brahmachari, he is living such an austere life and in this platform, but if he dies, then he will be elevated to a spiritual place. He will be, you know, not a brahmachari, but a person who is undergoing a lot of penance. So, because he is suffering so much now for a better next life, then that's why it's better that he dies now, then he'll have a better life next life. Right? And to a butcher, his life is so sinful. That when he's alive, he's committing sin, and when he's dying, when he'll die, he'll have to suffer. So, you know, he should neither live nor he should die. Because when he's alive, he's committing more sin, and when he's dead, he has to suffer. And to a devotee of the Lord, if he is enjoying in this life, serving the Lord, and after this life also he will enjoy in the association of the Lord and his devotee. So if he is alive or if he is dead, is equal. Now, so that way, you know, like a person whose life does not have any meaning, a person who has rejected his spiritual master, who is not following the instructions of his spiritual master, then what's the use of his being alive? So he better die. That is, of course, that doesn't mean that he should die. The meaning is, the purport is, that he should better follow the instructions of his spiritual master. Should follow the instructions of spiritual master and thus make spiritual progress. That is the goal of our life. So committing suicide is not the goal of. The Prabhupada pointed out this way because he knew that we are not strong enough to commit suicide because we could not follow the instruction of our spiritual master. If our attachment to our spiritual master that strong, then we would not have disobeyed his instruction at the first place. Isn't it? Any other questions? No, tell me again. I couldn't understand. Yeah, the husband is the spiritual master of the wife, provided the husband is a devotee of the Lord. If the husband is a rascal, then he is not a spiritual master. And when the husband is a devotee of the Lord, then automatically the husband is, you know, like he is training the wife how to become attached to Krishna. Right? And how to become attached to the spiritual master. So that way it falls in line. When I am a devotee of Krishna, then automatically I become devoted to other devotees of Krishna also. And I try to bring others also to Krishna consciousness and relate them to Krishna and Krishna's devotees and Krishna's representatives. So that way everything just falls in line. But if I am a rascal,
Then I do not follow Krishna and I nor do I bring others to Krishna. Is that clear? So what is the question? Maybe you can do one thing. You can say in German and Satyanandan Prabhu will say in English. I'm sorry because, you know, like...
She says that to give up the connection with other persons is not losing it all, but so is there not something that we will always be with this person, like what it is, these great devotees who were associated with Krishna, they are always they're together with Krishna in other leelas, like Bhagavad Chaitanya Leela. So is it not also possible that we would stay together with our persons who we love forever?
Yes, but the thing is that we should not become too attached to that concept also. Because that would mean that our love is not for Krishna so much as for others, because we want to stay with others more than with Krishna. You see, but if we are attached to Krishna, and then, you know, we'll be happy wherever Krishna places us. If we are with our, you know, friends and relatives, well and good. If not, then also it's well and good. Because we are perfectly situated being in love with Krishna. Is that clear? Like, you see, like, say, I'll point out. Say, if you are saying that, well, let me be with my father in my next life also. So that means that you're more attached to your father than to Krishna. Because you're more interested to stay with your father than with Krishna. Right? But if you're more attached to Krishna, then all you will want that, let me be with Krishna all the time. And if my father comes with me in the next life, well and good. If he doesn't, it doesn't matter because I am happy just being with Krishna. Is that clear? Or you have some more doubts here? No, you can, if you have any more doubts, you can say that. We are here to clarify our doubts. We have to understand. Another thing that we have to consider here, that, you see, Krishna's associates come from one pastime to another. As simply by arrangement of Krishna, not by their desire. Right? Like, say, as you were saying, say, Ramananda Roy, he was also in Krishna's pastime, and he was in Mahaprabhu's pastime. Now, Ramananda Roy was not desiring that, well, let me now go to Navadvip and, you know, and let me now go to Vidyanagar and become Ramananda Roy. He was simply surrendered to Krishna. Whatever Krishna wanted, he was ready to do that. It's not that he was desiring to be born in such and such place, with such and such family, in such and such family. He was simply
ready to go wherever Krishna wanted him to go. And also these people are in a Nitya Siddha platform. They are eternally liberated. They are not conditioned like us. Like we are born due to our karma. Due to our past activities, we are born in certain family, in certain place, and so on and so forth. But the people like Ramananda Roy, they are not born due to their past karma. They are born simply because of Krishna's desire. They are Krishna's eternal associates, and whenever Krishna performs his pastimes, they are there with Krishna. And of course, one thing is that, I mean, if our whole family becomes Krishna conscious, then yes, we, through Krishna, we will be we may be together. But there is no such assurance that we will be together. We may be together. Like for instance, the Pandavas, they're always together. But the reason why they're together, one thing is that they are very closely connected to each other, and also because their relationship is based on Krishna. Pandavas were in love with each other as Krishna's devotees, not on their bodily plane. So, if our relationship is Krishna conscious, then, and if our attachment to each other is so strong, then we'll be together even after this world, even after this life. Actually, man is never very attached to his wife. That's why it was the woman's duty to become attached to the husband. Krishna. Well, when you talk about Vedic society, it means Krishna consciousness. The Krishna consciousness may be less or more, the degree may differ, but the understanding was Krishna or the Supreme Lord. Because otherwise, why should one follow the Veda? Actually, following the Veda, Vedic instructions is not very easy. It's very difficult. And unless and until one is in love with Krishna, one could not do it. Unless and until one was Krishna conscious, one could not do it. Of course, there were some fanatics, but we are not considering them. I'm talking about a right-minded person. Like for instance, you know, like, why did we give up meat eating, intoxication, etc.? Because we developed some love for Krishna. And that's why we are doing it, because we have developed some love for our spiritual master, Krishna. So, in the Vedic society, they used to be like that. A real man is never attached to a woman. I mean, it is as a duty he is attached. Like he considers that it is his duty to take care of the woman who he is married to. But first of all, he used to get married in order to produce children, not for his self gratification. His marriage had a higher objective, a higher goal. And that's why in the Vedas, the instruction is the man is, also you can see, the man is basically outgoing. The man is not fixed at one place. He doesn't like to be fixed at one place. He likes to just go out and do things. But a woman is fixed at one place. And that's why she needs shelter. She has to be protected as a child. She has to, at a young age, she has to be protected by her parents. In her youth, she has to be protected by her husband. And in her old age, she has to be protected by her son. Huh? I mean, of course, nowadays, you know, the men have become so weak that it doesn't really apply to them. Yeah, the men are, right. Men are becoming like women and women are becoming like men. That is the Kali Yuga.
The reason why I asked this question was that it says that when a man becomes attached to a woman,
who
attached to a man, and dies, he becomes a man in the next life.
Yeah, that's right.
So I thought that maybe they always change
the role. No. And if the husband was too attached to a woman, then he would get a woman, he would get a woman's body in his next life. But if the husband was attached to Krishna, then he would go back to God. You see, then he won't get come back and change his body, you know, as such. The man is becoming a woman, a woman is becoming a man. The man would be elevated to Krishna consciousness, elevated to the spiritual sky. And the woman, she would either follow him to the spiritual sky, or at least she'll get a man's body. It's a constant progress. Spiritual life, or Vedic culture, is a constant progress. There's no regress, no coming back, or no falling down. It's gradually going up, higher and higher.
That's just written in the man, the book,
No, then it's me. But still, also, yeah, I mean, it is better. If she is still very attached to her husband, still it is good, because at least she is going to make some progress. At least she will get a man's body, and a pious man's body. Because since she is pious, she will get a pious man's body, very elevated. So, is there any other question? It seems that we have a question. Why it's so difficult? Because we are in Maya. That's why it's difficult. When we get rid of the Maya and become Krishna conscious, then we realize that we are not the controller, Krishna is the controller. And then we automatically become controlled. Actually, Maya is that. Maya is due to false ego. And false ego means desire to control, become the Lord. But we are not the enjoyer, we are enjoyed. We cannot enjoy ourselves as an enjoyer. We have to be enjoyed. We are not the Lord, but we are the servant. And our enjoyment is in our service. So the more submissive we become, the more joyful we become. More surrendered we become, more happy we become. So Maya means it's deluding us. Maya means misery. Maya means suffering. Right? So if we are in Maya, then we have to suffer. If we think that we are the Lord and Master, then we have to suffer. But if we realize that we are the humble servants of Krishna and Krishna's devotees, then automatically we become joyful. And the devotees are the example. The devotees are so joyful. Why? The karmis cannot understand that why these people are so joyful. The bright face, smiling, dancing. The karmis think that something must be terribly wrong with them. Why they're so happy? That's their question. But the thing is, the devotees are happy because they have given up Maya. They have given up their false ego. They have given up their desire to enjoy as a Lord. On the other hand, they have become just the humble servants of Krishna.
They also say that the Bhagavatam that the actions, the actions which we experience take place like just like wind the cloud moves to the sky, but the sky doesn't touch. And then, so my question is, aren't desire coming from the soul? And in this way, the desire, the soul is the origin. So how is he not the doer?
How is not the doer?
Yeah, the material.
So Krishna is also telling in Bhagavad Gita, Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvasham Ahamkara Vimura Atma Karta Ahamkara. The Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvasham. In the material nature, everything is happening by the guna and karma, by the modes of material nature and our karma activity. And means our as we act and the reaction, action and reaction. And ahamkara vimhura atma, kartaha nitimana. The spirit, the soul, living entity, who has been completely bewildered by his false ego, thinks that I am the doer. Right? Under no circumstances we are the doer. Right? We are directed. But in the spiritual platform, we are directly directed by Krishna. Right? In the spiritual platform also we are not the doer. But we act according to Krishna's desire. Krishna wants us to do. Krishna says, lift your right hand, we lift our right hand. And Krishna says, now lift your left hand, lift your left hand. That's how we do in the spiritual platform. Krishna says that now you just lie down, we lie down. Krishna says, now you fight with me, we fight with him. So you know, like, it's everything. In the spiritual platform, Krishna is directing everything. Right? But in the material platform, or rather when we say that, why shall I lift my right hand? When Krishna says, lift your right hand, if he says, no, why should I do that? Then Krishna says, okay, go to material world. And in the material world, also we do not do, but we think that we are doing. We say, I will not lift my right hand. We do not say that we will do something. In the material platform, the cause, the beginning is that I will not do. I will not act according to Krishna's desire. So it begins with, I will not act according to your desire. And so then the guna and karma act. Right? So the guna, the modes of material nature, pulls us. Right? And karma is pushes us. So there is a push and pull constantly, and that's how we are going in the material direction. Like the example can be given, like, have you seen a bull being tugged? The bull, there is a ring on a bull of a nose. So the guna is that ring on our nose. Right? And the guna is the modes of material nature pulling us. And the karma is a whip. And the karma is actually beating us on the back. And this way we are becoming, you know, we are forced to do things in the material sense. And we are saying, you know, we are being pulled by the modes of material nature. And we are saying, we are revolting again. We are saying, no, I will not act that way. And then immediately comes the bang from the behind, you know, that rod of the karma, karmic reaction. And we are forced to act, you know, that constantly. And what we do, I mean, we just end up being miserable. But if we just, you know, say, well, fine, I will just do it. Krishna, this is your material nature. Whichever way the material nature is pulling me, I will be. So then what happens? The karma stops. The whip stops. If the way the modes of material nature is pulling us, if we think that this is Krishna's arrangement, then we go along with the pull. Right? With our ring in our nose, we have material nature is pulling and we say, okay, fine, we'll go wherever you are tugging me. Right? Then the karma doesn't become so severe. Or severe. Because the karma becomes severe when we resist the mob. You get it? The whip comes when we do not want to follow the tug of the rope. Right? But when you go along with the rope, like imagine a bull, somebody is pulling the bull. Right? If the bull is going along with the pull of the rope, then the man doesn't have to beat the bull again to follow him. So the karma stops. And then, you know, we start to accept the mode or the gunas as Krishna's desire. So we go along with that. And then it is actually Krishna's desire, material nature. Right? Krishna's potency, Maya. And then, you know, this Maha, then the Maya becomes transformed into Yoga Maya. And in Yoga Maya, she helps us to go to Krishna. Is it clear?
And it shows my understanding is like in the last part, following the most, because someone might say, well, I'm now and now the mode of passion is coming, which means I do some compassionate activity and I do it for Krishna, and it is at Krishna consciousness.
Yes. Like a Kshatriya. They're in the mood of passion. I mean, they're really in the mood of passion. But they're just following the instructions of the Vedas. And they're doing the duty of a Kshatriya, king. And so although they're situated in the mood of passion, they're transcendentally situated.
As they do for Krishna, not that I'm doing
our
simple activity.
As a matter of fact, that just reminds me of one thing. That it said that the Krishna consciousness activity in the mode of passion, or rather when the passion is transformed into Krishna consciousness, then it is better than Krishna goodness, Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness in the mode of goodness. Like Sanatana Goswami explained that in Brihad Bhagavatam. He is pointing out the different stages of devotees. Narad Muni is finding out who is the greatest devotee. So he goes to a place on Prayag where he sees one Brahmin is, you know, doing all kinds of, you know, Vedic ritualistic activities and giving in charity. And so Narad Muni goes and tells, oh, you are such a great devotee of the Lord. You are the greatest devotee. The Brahmin says, no, I am not the greatest devotee. The king at such and such place, he is the greatest devotee. And Sanatana Goswami is explaining that over how the king, who is in the mode of passion, apparently, he is a greater devotee than the Brahmin who is in the mode of goodness. Yeah, sorry. So,
actually, I think it is clear by this. It must be a Krishna conscious activity in the world of passion.
No. Yeah. It must be for Krishna. Like Arjuna is fighting the battle.
Yeah.
It's in the mode of passion. I mean, you fight under the mode of passion, especially fight like that. I mean, apparently it's the mode of passion. But the thing is, it's a Krishna conscious activity. Then it, and that way, because it is Krishna conscious, it is transcendental. It is no more passionate activity. You know, when the passion is transformed into Krishna consciousness, then it is transcendental. But if it is for ourselves, if it is for our enjoyment, then it is not. So the understanding is, like, in whatever mode I am situated in, let me just be a Krishna conscious devotee. Just let me just become a devotee and do it for Krishna. And that would mean, you know, going along with the mood, like the being pulled with a rope. We're going with the rope. You know. But then finally, we completely, you know, transcendental, going out of the material plane.
So the beginning of our service is all conditioned then?
Yes. In the beginning, the beginning platform is Karma Yoga, right? Then it is Jnana Yoga. The Karma Yoga, when it is the physical, we have our three entities, three aspects of our identity. Our body, our gross body, our subtle body, and our spirit.
Right?
Now, when we are situated in the gross bodily platform, then we want to be active through the body.
Right.
So the activity is through the body, when it is offered to Krishna, then it is karma yoga.
Right.
Then we transcend that and come to the... Then we come to the subtle plan, subtle bodily plan.
Right.
And that, you know, the platform of mind, intelligence and false ego. In that platform, it is the intellectual platform, and the platform of jnana, knowledge.
Right.
And that knowledge is also directed towards Krishna consciousness. So then it is jnana yoga.
Right.
But when we become free from also the subtle body, and then we are situated in the spiritual platform, then it is pure devotion. When this pure spirit is serving the Lord in his pure identity, then it is spiritual service. That's why Rupa Goswami is defining the pure devotional service as jnana karmad anabhutam. Free from jnana and karma. Free from jnana yoga and karma yoga. Free from subtle body and free from the impulse of the subtle body and the gross body. When the pure spirit is purely serving the Supreme Lord, that is the pure devotion. Although apparently it seems that he is acting under the mood, but it has to be understood that he is transcendental. You get the point?
I think that because he is just using this particular nature to serve Krishna, therefore...
Like, to give you an example, you see, to a less intelligent man or to a ignorant person, it would appear that Prabhupada was acting under the mode of passion, right? You know, why this sadhu is, flying around the world and, doing so, why doesn't he sit in Vrindavan and just meditate in Krishna's lotus feet, right? But the thing is, Prabhupada's activities were purely transcendental, right? So that's why it is said that although it may appear that it is under the modes of influence, under the influence of the mode, but it has to be considered to be Brahma Bhuyaya, transcendental, absolutely spiritual. Like Prabhupada was not doing because he was in the bodily platform and he couldn't do without being active.
Right.
First of all, this doesn't apply because a 70-year-old man cannot be. Apparently shouldn't be very active as well. Young men can be active, being driven by the force of the impulse of the body.
Right.
But we can see that, so how come Prabhupada at the age of 70 to 80, 82, like a young man, he is traveling around everywhere, sleeping only 2 hours a day, and working for 22 hours, and practically eating nothing. And, so we can see, those who are close to him and opened his eyes and he saw Prabhupada, they could understand that Prabhupada was absolutely transcendental. So that is the example, that we have right in front of us. So the main thing is that for a devotee's activity, a pure devotee's activity, should never be considered to be mundane.
My question more like, there are different devotees in Krishna consciousness, and can everyone do pure transcendental
activities? No, the condition is abhyavicharana.
without coverage,
Without any consideration. Any other consideration but loving. Why is it leaking?
Nobody knows.
So, that is the consideration. That, you know, if it is done 100% for Krishna, then it has to be considered transcendental. But if it is, you know, my desire to some extent and then my devotional service to some extent, then it is. Then that platform, you know, partly devotional, partly selfish, that is known as yoga. Karma yoga, those are the karma yoga and jnana yoga. You know, through this body I want to do something. So let me do it and then offer the results to Krishna. That is karma yoga. Actually, I'm not doing it because Krishna wants me to do it, but I want to do it. I want to make a business, do a business and make a million. It's I who want it. But the thing is, okay, fine, you want to do it, go ahead, do it. But offer the results to Krishna. Right?
Yeah.
So that is karma yoga. Now I want to learn, I want to study, I want to learn. Okay, fine. But direct your knowledge towards Krishna. Jnana yoga. But when my consideration is not there, when it does not really matter whether I want something or not. But Krishna wants, so I must do it. Now, Krishna doesn't want me to go out and run a business and make a million. I mean, I don't want to, I don't want to run a business and make a million. But Krishna tells me, no, go and make the million. Then I do it because Krishna wants it. Then it is pure devotion. You see the difference?
Yes. And for us, in the Krishna consciousness movement, we come to this platform, this desire platform of unlimited devotion. What would we have to do?
Yeah, the first and foremost thing is to follow the instructions of the spiritual master, because we do not know what Krishna wants me to do, wants us to do. But the spiritual master, being the representative of Krishna, he knows what Krishna wants us to do. So we just follow the instructions of the spiritual master. That is the first and last thing of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is the transparent bi-medium. He is always there to guide us towards Krishna. So if we just follow his instructions, we are safe. But if we think that we know more than our spiritual master, then we are in mind. I think it depends on the individual, right? I mean, and also for me it is difficult to answer because I do not know the psychology of a woman, right? But I like to be alone in Krishna consciousness. I find it's better to be alone and be attached to Krishna. But I think for a woman it's difficult. You see, like for a man, he can be alone and, you know, take care of himself. But for a woman, it's difficult to be alone and take care of herself. That's why the women cannot become a sannyasi. Women has to always depend on someone. Of course, now we have the society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, that is giving protection to the women. So I think in this society the women can remain alone and serve Krishna. But if the society is not there, then it will be very difficult.
that didn't that karma and the guna always go together. So when we do our services, that is in some way under the influence.
Okay, to begin with, karma and guna do not go along together. Because we may stop our karma, but the guna may still be there, right? Like when one becomes a devotee. I mean, just after he surrenders to Krishna, his karma actually, you know, taken care of. His karma is zero then.
Right.
But still the gunas continue to some extent, because as long as he is in the material platform, he is under the influence of the mood, to some extent. So we have to understand that we can stop our karma, but we cannot stop the guna. Gunas are the arrangements of the material nature. It is Krishna's arrangement. The gunas may be there, but we do not have any control over the guna. But we have the control over our karma. That is, by surrendering to Krishna and by depending on Krishna, we have, you know, taken care of our karma. But still guna will be there to some extent. The example is King Bharat. The King Bharat, by Krishna's arrangement, he got a body of a deer in the mode of ignorance. Right? I mean, animal body is in the mode of ignorance. Right? But he too has taught a lesson that do not become attached to matter. And just by giving one body, he took care of all his attachments. And next life, he was Jarabhaya, he was in.
What
happened? Devaki?
Sorry?
No, conscious sister, Devaki.
Yeah. That's when he...
He understood Vasudeva's instruction. And but still, why he? Then what is the next part of the question? I think I understood that. That's the demoniac mentality. You see, the demons, they get a good advice. For the time being,
their influence. But then again, you know, like, they'll go back, they'll forget this. It's good instruction, good advice, and become a demon. Right? They will reject the good advice and be carried away by that bad association. That's what happened to Kamsa. He went back to his friends and bad association, and he was influenced by them. And then he completely forgot what was the right thing to do. Well, he was a doer, because he was thinking that he was a doer, right? He was thinking that, I will kill Krishna. So that is the height of demoniac mentality. Not only they defy the Lord, but they want to destroy the Lord. So we also have to learn, like, one day we get a good advice and we think that now I'll become a devotee. And the next day we shouldn't think, let's forget it, let me go and enjoy. We shouldn't become like that. We should become a devotee. We should try to, actually, we have a devotee and demon, the suras, the demigods and the demons residing in this body. And sometimes the demigods come and give us good advice, sometimes demons influence us and make us demoniac. So now we have to take shelter of Krishna, who is the killer of the demons, and destroy all the demons in us and bring out the devotees in us. I mean, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Shishupal, Dantavakra, they all are there in our body. They're constantly influencing us. But now we have to take shelter of Krishna and pray to him that, Krishna, please come and kill this Hiranyakashipu. Krishna, please, now you kill the Hiranyaksha. Please kill the Shishupal, Dantavakra, Ravan, all these demons. And bring out, please, let the Prahlad, Dhruva Maharaj, all these great devotees become manifested. So,